been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank, broadcasting live every other Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. We're live here in the Woodlands. We've got an all-star lineup for you today. Dr. John Newbold, College of Business, Sam Houston State University. He's my co-host. What's going on there, Dr. John?
Hey, doing great. We just finished up our spring semester, so we're in between courses. We've got mini master classes going on, but we don't start up again until the beginning of June.
So you sent the kids home packing. They were ready to go. You were probably ready for them to go too, right?
That's right. That's right.
We've got Kevin Mims and Joey Muckenthaler, and these guys are entrepreneurs. They've got a business that's called Deacon Baldy's. If you've been out on 1488, you might have been there. It's a really cool story. We're going to dive into that here shortly. There's a couple of other business interests that Kevin is involved in, and we're going to learn about those too. But before we get started with all of that, I just want to give a shout out to a couple of other people at the entrepreneurship program at Sam Houston State. That would be Dr. Jamie Collins and also Chip Matthews and the Dean of the College of Business, Dean Mitchell Museum. And hey, I had the distinct pleasure of being a shark in the recently in the Shark Tank class. It was the class project for entrepreneur students in lieu of having to take the final exam. So I don't know, would you guys have done the project or would you take the final exam?
Oh, I'd have done the project, 100%.
Yeah. What do you think, Joey?
I would have done the exam.
Yeah, so they had the choice, and we got to, myself and a couple of other faculty members, comment on, you know, questions and, you know, play the shark role in the classroom. And it was tough to tell who was, you know, just going through the motions and who had a real business idea. But one of the ones the kids had a idea about was called doggy daycare. And I thought about the ridiculous amount of money that people spend on their pets around here. A couple of our successful entrepreneur clients are veterinarians. And you see these pet hotels and all of these things popping up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on my way to work here, there's a thing down the street here. Have you seen called adult daycare? You seen that?
That sounds terrifying.
It does. Well, I, you know, before my dad passed away, I used to kid with him and tell him I was gonna take him there. But that you know, all kinds of things pop up, and I want to just talk briefly about the concept of entrepreneurship before we get into Kevin and Joey's story. I was reading recently in a magazine. Do you know who this guy is that started the Dollar Shave Club, Michael Dubin?
I'm familiar with the company.
You ever heard anything about his story?
Not the story. I'm familiar with the company, though.
Yeah, so in 5 years, this guy takes a... You've seen his commercials, right? They're just...
I'm a customer. I get the blame.
Okay. Yeah, he's got like 3 million customers in the United States. Mm-hmm. This guy took this warehouse. Somehow he got this warehouse full of these razors, and he got this idea and this concept. And he was a pretty cool thinker. You know, these... I think the commercials were... They were cool, funny commercials, right? Y'all mm-hmm. saw them, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, did you know in 5 years he built this company up, sold it for $1 billion?
Who'd he sell it to?
And it was one of the big conglomerates. You know, I didn't get that far in the article, but it made me think in entrepreneurship, and you guys, your Deacon Baldy's, that's a little bit of a new concept we're going to hear about. But a lot of times what entrepreneurs do is they see things that other people haven't seen before. It made me think of the Buc-ee's guy that has these wildly successful, and I imagine him telling his business partners that, you know, I want to do this convenience store, and it's going to be like a Walmart, you know, it's mm-hmm. got 500 gas pumps outside, and it's going to have thousands of feet, and we're going to, and they're, you know, what are you going to sell? Well, same stuff they sell in a convenience store, and nobody had ever seen it before, but I guess that's what entrepreneurs do sometimes. They see things that other people can't see. So anyway. Enough about that. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about you, your background, how you got started, and then Joey will get you to weigh in as well.
Right. So, I'm was raised here in the Woodlands. I played on the Woodlands High School football team. That took me out to Northwestern on a football scholarship, where I majored in football, minored in mechanical engineering, and met my beautiful bride out there. She was the captain of the volleyball team, and now we have 3 kiddos and 1 on the way.
1 on the way, you said, huh?
Yeah.
All right. You figured out how this is happening yet?
Right. Yeah.
I told you I was going to, you know, mess with you a little bit. Yeah. We'd have a little fun here, right?
The whole the practice is the best part. The kids are the result of that. Thank you. We had started a company called Imagine Motive back in 2008 with my dad, the aforementioned Deacon Baldy himself, and we were building custom vehicles and trailers, food trucks being one of those, and we had a nice piece of frontage property we wanted to use on 1488. So that's a very long story made really short, but that's how we came up with Deacon Baldy's.
So, Joey, okay, I've been to your place. I know what it is. But if someone here, you know, tell someone they don't know one thing about what Deacon Baldy's is, tell us what that is.
So Deacon Baldy's is an outdoor patio bar that focuses on craft beer. And what we kind of wanted to do was, Kevin and I have been friends for, I don't know, 15 years. And we spent a lot of time on his parents' back porch just hanging out. And even as we got older, you know, staying up late, smoking cigars and drinking whiskey and just talking until late in the morning.
And you go, we got to make a business out of this, dude.
And that was kind of the whole thought process is there's not a lot of places you can go and like take your family and just hang out and talk. And we have community seating, so it's all huge picnic tables. So you have to sit with people you don't know. We just, you know, wanted it to be a big place where the community could come and hang out and just enjoy themselves.
Yeah, it was kind of selfish. We both have three kids, so there's no place we can go, especially if we go together as families.
No.
With so many people that, and the kids going crazy. My oldest is 4, and trying to get all of those little ones in a spot and quiet is impossible. So that's, Deacon Baldy's is a great place for that.
Did I see something on the news? Did you guys just finish out a kids area over there?
Yeah, we've got a little kids area. It's got mulch laid down. We've got some now beat up bags boards that the kids have had their way with, but where they can go out there and play and run around. It's semi fenced in, so parents have a little easier time keeping an eye on their kids.
So you guys built this pavilion. It's like a red iron metal, you know, roof sort of building on over a concrete slab. You have a bar there, a big open, and then it's surrounded by food trucks.
Right.
Right? Now, these are independent vendors?
Yes.
They're totally independent. The food trucks are their own company, and they just lease space. We lease space to them.
They lease space. So the experience is you can come out and have some drinks at the bar that you own, and then you can tour and taste around these different food trucks out there.
Right? And we want it to be a partnership. You know, there's some we're doing a lot of research starting the food truck park. There's lots of food truck parks. A lot in Austin. There's a couple in Dallas, and there's a couple in Houston. And some of the parks just charge this outrageous rent to the food trucks, thousands and thousands of dollars. And we didn't want it to be that way. We wanted it to be a relationship that helped each other. We wanted them to be able to make money and expand and then help them to succeed and bring people in so that we can make money on the bar.
A symbiotic.
Yeah, we have two of our trucks have already started their second truck since being here. So
okay.
They're both expanding wildly.
And the couple of times I've been to your place, I've noticed that these people are staying with you. It's not, they don't look too much like come and go.
Yeah, we've got four trucks.
But are you full?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got four trucks that are there all the time. And then we have two that come in on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to fill in, give a little more variety to the excess crowds. Yeah.
To the offerings. So when you come on the weekend, you're going to have like six trucks that you could pick from, right?
Right.
Right.
So you guys are, you're running a bar business right there, but you're also running a real estate rental business because you're renting property out, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Fair to say? Okay. All right. So, but Kevin, you've got your hands in a couple of other different things. You're, it sounds like you had this company, Imagine Motive, and you sold that, and now you're involved in commercial real estate, and then you're in a software deal.
Right.
Okay, and you got three kids and one on the way?
Right.
Do you have like a twin brother? What's up?
No, the power of being an entrepreneur means that you can do whatever you want to do. The nice thing about having the people around me like Joey is that I have these wild and crazy ideas like Deacon Baldy's, but once I get them up and running and once I get them operational, I need to be able to hand them off to someone, and that's what Joey has done beautifully at Deacon Baldy's. It's the same thing. My brother-in-law runs the commercial real estate side. He comes to me with issues, big issues, and we talk about expansion all day long. Same thing with Joey. We talk about expansion. We talk about what beers we put on. We talk about do we bring in live music, all of those things. But I get bored if I talk about the same subject for too long.
Okay. Well, that's pretty awesome. So you recognize there's only one of you, and you're doing things through leadership and teamwork. Is that something that you learned through football?
Well, the teamwork side for sure, dealing with people and other things. I'm a huge proponent of self-growth. So learning things that you know, I didn't know when I owned Imagimotive. You know, I ran that company, and we ran it on cash for the last couple of years we had it, but it was always stressful. My wife and mom did the books, and they were always coming to me asking when the next check from the client was coming in, and it just didn't work. And so I'm taking those lessons along with, I read a book a week, I listen to podcasts on entrepreneurship, and I learned through all of that to be able to delegate a little bit better, because I am a little bit of a control freak.
Just a little.
Yeah. Thanks, Joey.
It's interesting you said that, because this guy, Michael Dubin, that I was reading about, sold Dollar right. Shave Club for $1 billion after building it in 5 years. It said he is a voracious reader. And he mentioned one of the books that he really got a lot out of was Peter Drucker's The Effective Executive. Is there one or two, Kevin or Joey, that, you know, stand out for you guys that maybe in the last year or two that you would recommend to other entrepreneurs?
Yeah, in the last year, the E-Myth.
E-Myth is great.
Yeah, was huge in helping me develop the processes to run the companies by themselves. Having three major operating companies, I have to have them run by themselves. And that book really taught me how to set up those processes and let people be responsible for those items.
If you haven't read the E-Myth by Gerber, Michael
right.
Gerber,
yep.
It's one of the cornerstone of the, you know, it's a cornerstone sort of business book. And my takeaway from that was finding time to work on the business instead of in the business.
Exactly.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he describes through storytelling, I think, some of the typical entrepreneur traps that people fall into. And
it was like looking in a mirror for how I ran Imagimotive, for all of the pitfalls that he was describing. And so being able to come out of that and apply those lessons through these other companies has been huge.
So we think a lot about, you know, going to school and getting your education and, you know, the work that you guys do at the university level, John, is I think the you know, the place to for all the creative thought and really the blocking and tackling. But it's also, you know, if you think you go get your degree and you're done, I would say people are sadly mistaken. Learning's a lifelong pursuit, right?
Absolutely.
No, every not day. At all. And, not, and probably the best learning is not necessarily in the classroom. I mean, you can pick up some stuff in the classroom, but going out and doing really is where people learn.
Yeah, right? And I'd say I really kudos to you, John, for being here, because you teach at the university level, but I know that you and I both learn every time that we're interviewing these entrepreneurs, because mm-hmm. We pick up gems along the way and affirmations of things we learned. There's commonality in traits and things that make people successful in business. So with that in mind, I want to learn a little bit more and have you guys comment on, you know, you got the business off the ground, you're running a lot of different things. How about some advice? You know, I think there was maybe at one point that for you, this was an idea. And how did you step across going from the idea concept to implementation? How did you do that?
Yeah, I sit and run analysis on commercial real estate, you know, 4 or 5 times a week on different properties. And being able to do that same kind of analysis on an operating business was really beneficial to the people we went to go get funding from. Showing, hey, look, we're looking at a 12% return, first year cash on cash. You know, that's something that once I'm speaking the language of the person that I'm looking to get that money from, it worked out really well. Once we knew it made sense, there wasn't a lot of back and forth. It was, all right, let's go do this.
Let me ask you guys a question. Maybe Joey, I'll ask you, is like, how do you know there are so many bars that are open everywhere? And we know that craft beers are growing, but was there any part of it? Were you able to do any research, or did you go strictly on gut, or did you have to look around and say, well, yeah, I think this market will support, you know, what we're talking
demographics.
About
demographics.
We got really lucky in that there was just a huge hole in the market for craft beer where we're at. And the only craft beer bar in the area is, I mean, really kind of dedicated, this is what we do craft beer, is Hop Scholar over on Rayford. And they're great, mm-hmm. but they're like half an hour from my house. And so there was just a huge hole in the market. And with craft beer growing the way it is, with the community growing the way it is, it just didn't make a lot of sense that it wouldn't work.
So, I mean, you just looked around because you live here and you looked around and you said, well, there's Hop Scholar and there's not much else.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, there was no place to go.
Yeah.
If anything.
We ran the demographics to make sure our gut was right, but
yeah,
it was a gut feeling altogether because we originally didn't even have the bar as part of the concept.
Okay, so it was going to be more of a food court sort
right.
of arrangement.
Yeah, we were going to put up a pavilion and let people hang out there and then just charge rent to the food trucks, but that business model didn't work. So that's when I told Joey about it, and he was like, ooh, craft beer bar. Yes, please.
And, and you know, they got all the cool TVs. You can watch your sports. Yeah. You know, right now, I'm in sports heaven. Not to, you know, get off on that, but we got Stanley Cup playoffs going on. The Astros are on a hot streak. You know, Rockets just got – you know, knocked out, but NBA mm-hmm. still going on, and yeah, it's tying us over till football starts,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm loving that. Producer says we need to run to a commercial break. We're going to be right back. Don't go away. Don't forget, you're going to be able to download Kevin and Joey's story on all of the iTunes, and a complete episode can be downloaded at www.houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Do you want to own your own business, be your own boss, or learn to be a successful manager? Become part of the exciting new entrepreneurship degree program at Sam Houston State University. SHSU has created a new degree program that will allow you to develop your business goals while talented instructors give you the tools you need to be successful. SHSU prepares you to own and operate a small business while presenting many employment opportunities. Entrepreneurship majors are especially appealing to major companies and to acceptance for their management development programs. Build your own future today by applying for entrepreneurship degree at Sam Houston State University. You can visit us on the web at shsu.edu. And we are back at the Shrimp Tank with Dr. John, with Kevin and Joey, Deacon Baldy's, a really cool place out on 1488. And these guys are high school football buddies, played for coach y'all both played for coach Willig. We were talking about her earlier here in the warm-up, and friendship brought you back together. Your family guys now, your business owners, partners, entrepreneurs, you got a lot going on, and now you say, hey, we got this great idea. You're getting apparently you like how it's going out there because you're talking about doing another one, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
So expansion plans are always coming. We know we had a good idea when in the first month we had half a dozen people say, hey, I want to open one of these. So we looked in the franchising route, didn't really want to do it. Now we have people come to us asking to do partnerships. And so we're in the process of exploring all of those options. If they don't work out, we'll do it naturally and let cash flow run the business. But if we can expand and get on top of the food truck and craft beer craze, now would be a good time to do it.
Yeah, I got a question about that. And for any listeners that have maybe a real estate background or inkling, but could your concept potentially be utilized as an interim land use project?
Not as an interim. Putting the bar there takes a lot of permitting and licensing through TABC and other things, and doing it as an interim project may not work unless the time frame was 5 to 10 years. Then it probably would, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you guys. So you've got the both of you that are the founders, but how do you divide up responsibilities? A lot of people like to start up a business with a co-pilot or a wingman or whatever. So how did you guys decide that up front, and has it evolved as it's grown?
I would say that Kevin's the entrepreneur and I'm the operator. And that was kind of always just the natural fit. What we always intended from the beginning was Kevin is kind of the CEO of the business, and I'm the guy in the business running it, the GM.
So can you talk about what you do on a day-to-day basis then, Joey? Like in terms as the operator, does that mean that you're on site all the time? You're the guy there every day?
I'm the guy that's there every day. And, you know, I order all the beer, and we run all the training programs and cocktails and staffing and training and everything that makes the business go.
All right. And then, Kevin, what's your role then?
Yeah, we practice trickle-down economics a little bit. We established all of the training programs and hiring procedures and things together, and then I push them off to Joey and say, go run the ship. My role now is really just to make sure Joey doesn't screw it up.
And one other question kind of related to that. Do either of you have, is there a mentor in the picture? Is there somebody you go to who already owned a business like this or something that you go to or you involve in key decisions?
Not now. It was Deacon Baldy. It was my dad. He's the entrepreneur. He sold his oil and gas company to Schlumberger back in 2008, which is what, you know, funded most of this stuff. And, you know, his work ethic, his spirit, his ability to run a business the way he wanted it to be run is the model that I work off of.
So, and you have these different business owners, business interests, Kevin. Tell us how you... Did you find a good attorney to work with that helped you with your governance and partnership agreements and all of those things? I mean, how did you sort that out? Because a young entrepreneur may have a great idea in his mind, but you know what? You got to build it out the right way. Could you speak to that just a little bit?
Again, thank God I'm a second generation entrepreneur because Dad had already set most of that stuff up. And shameless plug to Knighton and Stone.
Yeah, Jay's a good friend of mine. Yeah, you work with Jay?
Yeah. Yeah. And so... I call him or his office up and I said, this is what I'm looking to do. How's it fit in with the other 20 LLCs we already have? They work it out for me. And it's, again, like we developing procedures for Joey. It's something that, you know, I call and ask him to get it done. I know it's going to be done right the first time.
Yeah. Well, you're with a good firm and you have to have somebody like that in your corner, because if you're, you know, pulling documents off the internet and, you know, trying to run businesses off of that, I would strongly advise against that. You've got to have good legal and tax counsel. If you tell these guys what your ideas are and what you want to do, they'll help you set it up the right way, considering tax efficiency, asset protection, and all of these other things that we advise people in.
Yeah, so. Often our setup meetings are a couple hours long.
Right.
Make sure it's all set up the right way.
Right, right. Good. Okay.
And can I ask Joey a quick question? Is there, in terms of operating it, were there any, I wouldn't call it a mistake, but was there anything that you started out doing in terms of the setup that you've since said, oh, that's not working, let's switch and do it this way?
Oh, God, there's tons of things. I mean, I had never run a bar going into it. And so I feel like, especially for the first 6 months, I feel like everything changed at some point, whether it was how we do this cocktail or something as simple as like a cocktail technique or something as complicated as the entire training program that we rewrote and the operations manual and the whole thing. And then some things you just can't change, like the placement of our walk-in fridge, you know,
right.
I'd love to change, but you know, there's some things you have to kind of move around. But staffing is always something that's constantly changing with the seasons because we're an outdoor bar. In the winter, it's dead. We may only need, you know, you could get by with 4 staff members in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's spring, you may need 12 or 15.
And could you speak a little bit about how you recruit for staff? I would think there's a lot of people that would love to work at a place like Deacon Baldy's, but a lot of those people might not be the best employees. So what criteria do you use when you're looking to hire?
The service industry is notorious for high staff turnover. The people working in the industry, either drinking or doing drugs, it's people who need cash right then are the people who often work in the industry.
Cash and beer
is very important.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I do, I think is, and it sounds weird, but one of the most important things we do in staffing is I'll just sit down and have a beer with the person I'm thinking about hiring. And if I can't enjoy having a beer with them, then they're not going to work at the bar. Because we're lucky that our staff...
Amen, brother. They call that chemistry, you know what? And there's not a spreadsheet or a formula for it, but I think that's the best way, in my humble opinion.
Absolutely. Our best staff member had no experience in the service industry before he started. He started as a barback, doing grunt work, washing dishes, wiping down tables. And now he's one of our shift leads. And it's because he's hungry and he wants to learn. He's, you know, buries himself in books. Last time I saw him reading a book, it was like a 500-page tome on Japanese whiskey or something.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to recommend him for like a much more complicated bar in a few years. He's going to outgrow me. But there's getting to know people and making sure that they fit into your dynamic is really, really important. And, you know, someone with the most experience may not be competent in the things you want them to be. It's easier to train people than untrain people.
And is there a culture, would you say, associated with Deacon Baldy's if you're working there?
You have to be pretty relaxed. It's just a really...
It's chill.
It's a really chill environment. There's tons of kids running around and, you know, people
like
just hanging out. And you have to be able to fit, because we're all very close as a staff. We're really kind of blessed that everyone gets along, and people who don't fit in don't stick around very long at all.
So I want to ask you guys about your concept in your head, and you go sit down and you're kicking it around. Does a business plan come out of this before you launch, or did you wing it?
No, business plan first every time.
Okay. Tell us about that.
So I've gone through, like I said, I've probably got 25 LLCs, had a medical device company we started, and it failed before it got off the ground. But before starting any business, create a business plan, create financials, typically a five-year financial plan, and make sure it all makes sense for the people putting money in. And as long as that makes sense and we can send that business plan out and get a positive response back, we know we've got something before we have to put a dime into it. Obviously, time is money, but you know, if you're going to make a billion-dollar razor company, starting with the business plans, at least you can do so.
So where do you transition from bootstrapping and friends and family and capital raised that way to, you know, looking at SBA loans or something that's going to be typically lower cost where you don't have to give equity away? As you guys get traction, how do you? What's your thoughts about that?
I don't know. I'd say I'm an equity first guy because I'm involved in so many startups, but I've also gone the SBA route. I've gone traditional loans, especially for the real estate side. But trying to make sure the finances make sense, that you still hold control with the equity, or you're not giving away the farm with the loan, is it's just strategic based on the company and the situation. To give you a good example really quickly, the landscaping we just put in at Deacon Baldy's, we did not have the cash for. So I went to a good friend the day we opened. He said, I want to own part of this. How do I do it? And I said, sorry, bud, not for sale. We had a mud pit that the grass we put in died. It wasn't fun to be around. I knew we needed landscaping. So I called him and I said, hey, here's your chance. I'm going to offer you a little piece of equity on this. And he went for it.
I like that. Barter, you swapped it out and, you know, you got an investor and...
Yeah.
Right? And a partner?
I've heard when you're talking about opening up the second one or making improvements on the current one and you need cash, I've heard a lot of companies have a very conservative philosophy of like they'll only wait until they'll basically pay for the stuff out of retained earnings or whatever. But what's your philosophy on that? Isn't there a smart use of credit or loans if you're trying to expand? And so, you know, how do you guys think about that?
There is. I follow the Dave Ramsey path more than the equity path, or excuse me, the leverage path. But so I try to do as much on cash as I can, but to expand at the velocity we want to, that just doesn't make sense. So finding investors for new investments, new real estate, say a mobile home park or the next Deacon Baldy's, that's a much quicker path to realization than trying and go get SBA loan, because we still need the capital to put down the down payment. So that cash has got to come from somewhere. It's much easier to find an investor and then leverage the back end than it is trying to wait for the cash to come up and do it naturally.
And nobody likes debt, but you know what? If your kid gets out of college, they have a good job, they're, you know, and they say, hey, I'm thinking of buying a house, you're not going to tell them to wait 20 years till you have the money to buy the house.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to use leverage, and I say it's a dual-edged sword. It can make you rich, and it can make you broke. And you have to use it in proper measure. But even ExxonMobil, who went to Congress to explain, well, all the cash on the balance sheet, you know, billions of dollars of cash on their balance sheet. Well, they could easily pay off all their bondholders, but they don't do it, do they? They say, hey, know what? I can pay a bondholder 6%, and I can take this cash in our core business ventures and, you know, we earn 18-20% on with our money. So.
And Kevin may have addressed this, but it's the issue of it's one thing to owe on a loan, another to give up equity to somebody.
Right, right? And it depends on the strategy for the business. For us at Deacon Baldy's, the guy I called was, again, a great friend. We played high school ball with him early in high school. He's actually the one that made this shirt that I'm wearing. It says Deacon Baldy's drinking team on the back. His shirt has a C for captain on it. You know, when you have people like that that are as passionate about your business as you are, trying to bring them on in some sort of capacity is typically pretty smart.
So I want to ask Joey something. You know, I'm thinking about both of you guys got young kids, not one or two. You got, you know, three or four kids, right? And this bar business, you know, it's fun, it's, you know, sexy, all of that stuff. But you know what? It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of work. It's into the nights and all of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a grind. So how do you manage that, being a dad and a family man and a running a business that's is so entirely demanding?
It's a constant struggle. And so when we first started, probably a month out up to maybe a month and a half in, I was probably working 100 to 120 hours a week.
Whoa, you hear that? Hold on. Hit the brakes here. Okay, these guys have achieved a modicum of some success here, but you know, that's common. I hear people work, you know, a lot of people, be honest with yourself if you're listening to this, a lot of people are not willing to do what sometimes it takes, what you did.
100 hours a week.
Yeah.
A lot of people's wives aren't willing to give up their husbands for that amount of time.
That's right. That's a six-day work week I was doing that in.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
And I think one pay period I billed like 238 hours or something. And but you have to, if you're going to start a business like a bar, and especially if you're someone like me who's never been in that industry before, you have to immerse yourself in it if it's going to be successful, because you have to know everything about it. And that was something my wife and I had a long conversation about, that, you know, how do you feel about being a single mother for 2 months? Because on Monday, my day off, I'm just going to be like dead to the world. And I was. It took a long time to kind of adjust to it. But I'm really lucky that I have someone like Kevin and our other business partner, Harry, and my assistant manager, Danny, who can step in, and we were able to kind of make a schedule that fit well with my family. But I'm still doing 50, 60, sometimes 70 hour weeks, depending on what's going on, if we're making a new thing. And it's something that you have to be willing to make that sacrifice. And you have to, it's something, if you have a spouse and kids, you have to have a conversation about it.
You know what, in 10 years down the road, you might find your work balance, but if you're a millennial and you know, and the most important thing to you is work-life balance, you might be better off to get a job somewhere at a company, because if you're going to try to be an entrepreneur and have it all, you know, have your travel and all, you know, your lattes, and you know, it's going to be tough, because being an entrepreneur is a grueling road. So our producer's telling me we need to run off to another commercial break. We're going to be right back. We're with Kevin and Joey at Deacon Baldy's, and don't go away. You're going to be able to download a complete replay of their show on iTunes and houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. One of the largest and most influential business associations in the Houston region is the Woodlands Area Chamber of Commerce. The Woodlands Area Chamber of Commerce represents an active segment of our local community, including small and emerging businesses, mid-market companies, and industry-leading corporations. Our member-based nonprofits work with business and civic leaders alike for the advancement of South Montgomery County. We cultivate new and innovative ways for members to market themselves, their products, and their service to fellow members in our community. For more information, visit thewoodlandschamber.org. Back with Dr. John from Sam Houston State University and Kevin and Joey with Deacon Baldy's. We're learning about how you guys got this off the ground, this concept. Yep.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
I'm going to ask a marketing question. I'm a marketing professor.
He's a marketing wizard.
And talking to a lot of people who have small businesses in the Woodlands, I think they struggle with, how do I promote this? How do I get the word out? How do I create awareness? So you guys launched, what, 8 months ago, something like that? Is that what you said? My question is, what did you, when you guys talked about it, what approach did you guys take in order to promote the awareness that you were open?
I would say that that's still to this day a growth area for us. We talk to people all the time who drive by the bar every day who have no idea that it's there. And part of that is, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But social media is the easiest and fastest way to get a hold of multiple people. And if you, you know, little things like...
And the cheapest.
And the cheapest. Yeah. Absolutely the cheapest. And if you can find someone who's good at social media, who knows when to post, how to, you know, make things that are going to be shared. And if you're on Twitter, keeping things interesting and entertaining. If you're on Facebook, make things a little bit longer and a little more heartfelt. Use pictures, Instagram, things like that. But I would say marketing is still something that we're working on.
Do you ever sit down and talk to each other and say, hey, maybe we should pay for a big old billboard right here that says Deacon Baldy's, you know, right here, or, you know what I mean, just to create an awareness? Or do you look at that and go, no, that's too much money, that's not worth it?
The billboard we would do. I thought you were going to say big marketing company.
No,
that's not something we would pay for. To me, marketing, and it may have been a pitfall at Imagimotive that I'm bringing over to Deacon Baldy's, but I've never been one to go out and get a PR person or a marketing person to, you know, put you out there. I mean, we've had news crews and we've had newspaper articles and we've had all those things written and said about us just from, you know, in my humble opinion, being awesome. So
I was going to say, I just got my community impact newspaper yesterday, and you guys were in there. A little article on you.
It's my not so humble community. It's okay to, you know, be out there. And hey, one of the things that you guys got going on now is live music, and I know that attracts people. And so I didn't know about that. I've been to your place. I knew about it, but I didn't know what you got going on with the live music. Will you talk about that?
Yeah, we've got two acts. One on Friday night, one on Saturday night, from 7 to 11 p.m. This weekend we have Paige Lewis on Friday night and Justin and Jeremy on Saturday night.
What kind of music do they play?
Typically country, Texas country.
A lot of covers.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Cool.
And we wanted to, because it's a metal building, doing full bands and really loud bands doesn't really work. There's tons and tons of reverb. And so we just try and keep things acoustic. And the biggest thing is we want people to still be able to carry on a conversation while the music's going on. And that's something that Kevin and I both hate about. You go to a live music place and you're screaming at each other 4 inches away from the other person's face trying to be heard.
You don't want to blow the kids out too, because you got kids running around and all of that. Yeah. How about if somebody wanted to do a private event and you know, maybe have section off a part of your bar? Can we do that? Could Provident have a client craft beer night out at your place? Could we bring our clients out there?
We do it. A lot of it depends on when. Because of the nature of the community seating on Friday and Saturday night, it gets pretty crazy. And we try and make sure that, you know, everyone can get a seat. Because our parking lot fills up and then we're at capacity.
Yeah, what do you do for parking? Because that's kind of an issue, right? Huh?
Yeah, we've got a big parking lot behind the Imagimotive building. But even then, that'll fill up. People will park not in designated parking spaces, and then at that point we're full. Well, I've had a ton of people come and say, I would come on Friday and Saturday, but I can never find a parking space. So
valet, baby.
The neighborhood next to us had to get no parking signs on their street.
Yeah, so is it a problem?
It's a good problem. I mean, it's something we're looking to address in the near future. We already tried to address it early on, right after we got done with the build, and we were open for about a month. We went and paved the back parking lot. And still it's not enough, which is, again, a great problem to have. But we're looking to find some creative solutions to that issue moving forward.
Thank you. But
you guys alluded to the fact that you may be opening up a second one, or at least you're considering it. Give me an idea of when did you first think about that you might want to expand? Was it driven by the interest that you saw a lot of people you had mentioned, or you know, what are the factors that go into deciding whether to open up a second one?
It was entirely the amount of people coming and saying, I want to be part of this. We were still completely engulfed in getting the thing up and running. You know, I lost easy 5 years off my life getting that thing up and running in such a tight time frame. We didn't have permission from the health department to open until like an hour before we did. It was a high-stress situation opening, and so the response from people wanting to put their money in or their time in to expand this concept was humbling, but it also put a light bulb, said, hey, we could do two or three of these, but we had to get our feet underneath us first, and that's why we're just now getting out there and really accepting the conversation about going to number two or three.
So if we have a young aspiring entrepreneur, and I'll ask you both the question, Joey and Kevin, and you know, they have some idea and they go, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a business owner. I don't want to go to work for the man. You know, I want to do my own thing. And maybe they're just not yet at that place where, okay, I'm ready to step forward and launch. You know, what advice would you give someone? And each, I'd like to ask each of you to comment on that. But what advice would you give a young aspiring entrepreneur, whoever wants to go first?
We both point at each other. My advice would be, tell as many people as you can about the idea and get their response. When we went to go open Deacon Baldy's, I told everybody, hey, we're looking to do this. And there wasn't a single person that wasn't excited. Same thing with the software business. We're telling business owners that we're looking to help support them on a software side, and we've gotten an incredible response. And so don't be afraid to go out there. you know, in the first month or so while you're developing the idea and you don't know how to explain it, then maybe hold it to yourself. But as soon as you're ready to share the idea, go and get opinions.
Yeah.
And I would say one thing is, if you've never been, for me, I had no bar management experience when I started. And if I didn't have a wife and two kids at the time, now I have three, and I needed the health insurance for my last job, it would have been really, really smart for me to quit my job and go work at a bar.
Go learn the trade.
Learn the trade. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing if owning a bar is way different than serving drinks at your house.
Right.
And it's like the same people are like, I want to open up a restaurant. Like, you really, really don't.
Yeah.
And so it's way different than anything. Owning the business and running the business is so different from thinking about how cool it would be to start the business.
That's back to the E-Myth, right?
Yeah.
Being the technician versus being the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Did you, Joey, go around and look at other other similar operations?
We talked to a few people. There's a place in San Antonio called the Point Park and Eats that they did some consulting for us. And we went to a few different places. I went to some places in Dallas, went to some bars in Dallas. But there's not a lot of places like our concept. And so it wasn't the easiest. A lot of food truck parks who have beer don't focus on the alcohol side. It's just like, hey, we have, you know, 5 or 10 options and we were kind of going the opposite way, where the bar was really the focus and the food trucks were kind of there to support the bar. So there weren't a lot of options, but a lot of it was just reading and figuring out what works in the market. What are people in this market drinking? The answer is, you know, Bud Light in our particular neighborhood. So as much as I would like to not carry, you know, Bud Light, Miller Light, and just go only craft, it doesn't really work.
Dang.
For us.
He's going to browbeat me when I order a Coors Light. So do either of you guys have a mentor or a business coach?
No, again, my dad was pretty much that guy for me. His friends kind of stepped into that role after he passed away. But typically, it was just to go fishing. It wasn't necessarily to talk about business. Had one conversation with one of his buddies. I basically said that, will you be my mentor? And he was like, no, you don't need me. I was like, I know how to turn a dollar into 10. I don't know how to turn a million into 10 million. He goes, yes, you do. Just keep going. And that was literally the only advice I've gotten from someone that's been through it before.
I noticed you got a fishing shirt on, you know, I'm a fisherman myself. So yeah.
And Joey, did you want to say anything about that?
Yeah. My dad is my unsolicited business advisor.
What's his name?
Stan Muckenthaler.
Yeah, shout out to Stan, right?
And so he, every time he comes by the bar, I get an email with a list of things that we can do better and improve on. And I'm like, you've never worked in a restaurant. but he's always right, because he worked for, you know, Compaq and HP and, you know, a million different tech companies. And he just knows a lot about business. You know, he's a really, really smart guy, and he's always right, and I hate it when he is. But.
And you know he cares about you, and he's another set of eyes on the outside looking in, and that can be helpful, right?
Absolutely. It also helps that the especially the craft beer industry is so insular, and everyone wants to help each other out that, I mean, I could call any – I've talked to bar managers at other bars and people who are so successful they don't work at their bar anymore. And they're always happy to lend a hand. There's no one's particularly worried about, oh, if these guys get really successful, you know.
So last question. I got time for one of y'all to comment on it. And yeah, Catherine, she's giving me the hurry it up. Yes, it's not quite stink eye yet, but okay. So either one of you, what do you think is the biggest obstacle facing business owners today? You know, is it self-limiting beliefs? Is it you know, regulation? Is it competition? You know, what, or even like for you guys, what's, you know, what do you butt your head up against on a continually? Where's frustration for you?
That's a great question for Joey first, because I want to know what the answer is so I can fix it.
The biggest thing for us is, well, in the service industry, the customer is always the best and most difficult problem, if that makes sense, because you're not just selling, you know, the beer. It's an experience that you're trying to work with.
A unique experience.
And so I think one of the hardest pitfalls for us just starting the business was, well, there's, you know, anytime you're starting a bar, you got to work with TABC and the health department. That's always a nightmare. Red tape is different, but trying to figure out what people want, because it's so varied, we've had to change so much. If that makes sense. I don't know if that's a good answer to the question.
We built it for us, but other people are the ones buying it. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the toughest thing to run it from the upstairs perspective is again, more red tape. It's, you know, the cost of healthcare. It's the making sure all the contracts are have all the T's crossed and I's dotted, and being meticulous in that aspect. You know, making sure you're doing your budgets and your
numbers, and
yeah, making sure your KPIs are on point and all those things. So
yep,
it's a.
So, yeah, Joey made – all right, Catherine, I'll hurry up. Joey made me think of something when he's saying, knowing what your customer wants. And remember what Jobs said, you know, as he said, how do they know they want it if they've never seen it before, right? And that's kind of when he was describing 1,000 songs in your pocket in the podcast. So, you know, don't forget about you know, you guys are innovative, you're creative, and you know, maybe giving people things they haven't necessarily seen before. And that is okay. So we got to wrap it up. Kevin Mims, Joey Muckenthaler, tell us how someone would get in touch with you and or Deacon Baldies.
Yeah, deaconbaldies.com. You can call Joey's cell phone directly by
don't do that.
Give his cell phone. Come on.
Actually, deaconbaldies.com, you can actually find the contact, personal contact information for Joey and I. We really.
At the website.
Yeah, we really want the feedback from customers less in 3-star reviews and more in direct conversation with us, because we are trying to move Deacon Baldies from something we built for us, something built for our customers.
Okay. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Deacon Baldies.
Fabulous. Anything coming up this weekend you want a last shout out before we close it up?
I mean, we've got the live music coming up, and we've got some great food trucks. A new one from a football buddy of mine at Northwestern. One of his friends just opened up a hot dog cart called Bright Relish. So I'm excited to go on Sunday and get some Chicago dogs.
Awesome. Dr. John, thank you for being here. Thank you, Kevin Mims, Joey Muckenthaler. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. You pick up all the shows on iTunes. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's take a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.